Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Coughlin, President and CEO of McKinney Flavelle, and today is July 12th, 2021, and welcome to our Holy WASD podcast on a Monday. Yes, it's Monday, and WASD came out this morning, so we thought we'd give our listeners a recap and kind of what happened in the markets and what to expect moving forward. But before we do, I just wanted to congratulate a Colorado native for winning a stage at the Tour de France. A U.S. rider won. Sup, Cus. Kevin, what do you think about that?
I think it's awesome. It's good to get some USA participation back in the Tour de France.
I know. It was great. Well, everybody, that's Kevin Combs, Vice President of McKinney Flavelle. He'll be covering sugar. We also have Eric Thornton, Commodity Specialist for McKinney Flavelle. He'll be covering wheat. Hello, Eric.
Hello, Mike. Hello, everybody.
Happy Monday. And Nicole Thomas, Vice President, Information Sales and Service. Nicole.
Michael.
Holy corn.
No, I'm not depressing people this podcast. So,
okay.
You know.
Okay, good. Well, then let's start with Eric.
There you go. And we're going to make a positive sandwich here. Start with Eric.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll just say one thing. Congratulations to Lionel Messi for finally winning a big cup. Argentina won the Copa America Cup.
Woo-hoo.
So congratulations. Yeah, on Brazilian soil. Anyway, Eric, what happened with wheat?
Well, yeah, quite a bit happened with wheat today, Mike. So first, I guess we'll take a look at the U.S. balance sheet with the July WASD coming out today. And expectations leading into the report, we knew we were going to see a little bump in acreage. So that is now adjusted up to the 46.7 million acres based off the June 30th update to total planted acres for all wheat and harvested acreage. Going up about 400,000 acres to projected 38.1 million total acres. So that increase in acreage, though, was not enough to balance out what is expected to be a drop in production, and pretty sizable drop in production, falling from just under 1.9 billion bushels all the way down to 1.746 billion bushels. So yield took a significant hit. And we are now projected at 45.8 bushels per acre, down from 50.7 bushels per acre in June. So nearly a five bushel per acre drop in what's expected. And really, as we've been talking about in many podcasts and many updates with our clients and on IQ platform, the drought that is just gripping the northern plains and still very much in place. Obviously, that's where the heart of the spring wheat crop is here in the United States, is really starting to see the effects, and USDA is coming out and making those necessary adjustments. So as a result, again, production falling quite a bit and taking a big hit there. Some of the other changes noted, imports going up 20 million bushels to 145 million bushels. You're seeing that food and seed demand staying constant, no changes there, but feed demand being reduced by 10 million bushels from 180 million to 170 million bushels. And exports are also looking to fall down to 875 million bushels, a 25 million bushel reduction from June. And if that's true or realized, that would be actually the third fewest exports on record going back to 2002. So it just gives you an idea of the tight balance sheet we're expecting here for the U.S., as well as pricing in the U.S. being much higher in comparison to the other major producing regions around the globe, which are looking to be better off than the U.S. here for production as a whole. So again, that'll be the one of the lowest export seasons we have on record, if realized. And add it all up with the reduction in supply and some of the changes to demand, we fall a sizable 105 million bushels in ending stocks, dropping from 770 million all the way down to 665 million
wow.
bushels. So quite substantial, and a drop of nearly 13.5%. So pretty big adjustments, more than the market expected. You know, we saw pricing react accordingly and move upwards, you know, generally 20 to 35 cents across all three futures contracts. And again, this coming off of what was a decent drop last week based off the improved weather outlooks for most of the grain belt. But again, I think while we realized we would lose some of this production, we're certainly seeing that start to come to play in a sizable way for spring wheat. And just kind of looking at the individual classes as a result of the changes, we're seeing that hard red spring wheat production is just going to be about 305 million bushels for 21-22 compared to 530 million bushels last year. So just gives you an idea of how much lower we are in terms of production at this point. I think there's still room to go further lower in red spring wheat production, just based on, again, the northern plains and Montana and the western regions are just still dealing with very dry, hot conditions, and it doesn't look to let up in that region for the next few weeks. So they're missing out on the rainfall that's kind of hitting Iowa and points south and east. And we desperately need to see some rain up there. We're seeing the same thing in Durham wheat as well. That's expected to drop by nearly 50% year over year in terms of production, falling from 69 million bushels last year all the way down to a 37 million bushel projection this year. So we're seeing quite a sizable drop here in this WASDE report. That's the U.S. situation. And globally, we saw also pretty decent amount of changes. And I guess we start first with production. The U.S. was really the most sizable adjustment to production, coming down about 4.5 million metric tons equivalent. And then some of the other reductions lower. We saw China drop 2 million metric tons. Canada was revised a little bit lower by 500,000 metric ton to a 31.5 million metric ton estimate. And then Russia was also massaged lower by 1 million metric tons. So some of that, those reductions were offset by some of the increases we saw. So neighboring Russia and Ukraine, we saw just a slight increase there by 500,000 metric ton. And Australia, as I've mentioned on some podcasts here recently and some discussions on the platform, that we continue to see very good production estimates out of Australia. So we're up 1.5 million metric tons there this month at 28.5 million metric tons. I wouldn't be surprised if that increases further throughout the rest of this year. And we also saw just a slight increase to the EU, looking to be just over 138 million metric tons. So netting it all out, really didn't see too much changes to domestic feed or domestic usage. So all in all, ending stocks did fall in this update, and we are now expected to be at 291.68 million metric tons, about a 5 million metric ton drop versus June. So still comfortable stock situation, still projecting a record production at 702 million metric tons, but just definitely saw that the United States is going to be struggling to meet even these current estimates if we don't see that precipitation turn around in a big way in the northern plains. But we'll kind of keep an eye on things. And, you know, for a spring wheat user, certainly I'd be more concerned than that of, hard red winter wheat buyer or soft red winter wheat buyer, just given the two divergence in current stock situations. And, you know, obviously futures are reflecting that today. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see further reductions and to spring wheat, especially over these subsequent reports. But right now, we'll probably continue just to still trade off of weather, and then we'll see what happens over in corn and soy, which kind of putting the end to wheat. I'll toss it back to you first, Mike, but didn't seem to be a whole lot changing there in terms of soybeans, especially today, but for corn as well.
Great. All right. Well, speaking of corn, let's shift over to Nicole. Nicole, what did we see today?
Well, yeah, as Eric was alluding to, it was a pretty tame report today. For the current marketing year, U.S. ending stocks were lowered again, this time by 25 million bushels, puts us at about 1.082 billion. Of course, pushed that stocks to use number a little lower to 7.2%. So obviously still supportive for prices at those levels. And then for next year's numbers, really the only change was reflected via the updated acreage numbers from last month's report. We've got ending stocks now projected at a little over 1.4 billion bushels for 21-22. And if everything pans out as is reflected in that balance sheet right now, that would put us at 9.6%. Again, still a reasonably bullish scenario, or at least outlook for prices through the 21-22 crop. So not too much in the way of improvement year over year. Now, the global numbers were interesting in that ending stocks for 2020-21 were only lowered by 740,000 metric tons, puts it a little under 280 million. And stocks to use at 21%, which is, of course, down a couple of percentage points from the year prior. But why I felt a bit weird was USDA lowered Brazilian production by 5.5 million metric tons to 93. And that gets them more in line with CONAB's most recent forecast that put the crop a little over 93 million tons, based off of some of the weather during the production period for the safrinha crop. Now, the avoidance of a likewise decline in ending stocks was that USDA effectively took nearly all of that lost production out of Brazilian corn exports. Global demand was also lowered by a little more than 3.6 million tons, including an 800,000 metric ton reduction for the EU in terms of usage. But the rest is indiscernible in this report. So in other words, if Brazil isn't exporting that corn, A, where is it going to come from? Or B, where will demand decline occur? And we couldn't really see that in the numbers, at least not via the major producers slash consumers that get highlighted in the report. So, you know, I guess we can surmise maybe more wheat feeding, lower livestock production globally. I don't know. We didn't really get any firm answers there. So that leaves me a little nervous for the corn situation overall, especially considering the ability to just maintain the stocks to use that's at parity with this year going into next year means that we have to get stellar production this year. And for perspective, the current projected rebounds in production in major origins include Argentina up 2.5 million tons from 2021, Brazil up 25 million tons from last year, or from the current year, I guess I should say, Ukraine up 7.2 million tons, and China up 7.3. And that's along with the projected 25 million ton increase to U.S. production. So a lot has to kind of go well with the weather for the remainder of the season, and not just here, also in South America later this year, just as you know, we're starting to hear commentary about the return of at least the weak La Nina at the end of this year that would coincide again sort of perfectly with the production season in South America. Now, for soybeans, the ending stocks for the current year were left unchanged, 135 million bushels. There were some offsetting reductions to crush and exports versus lower imports that kind of kept that net the same. And for 21-22, no changes there as well. So we're still sitting at estimated 155 million bushels at ending stocks. And overall, the initial expectation is that export demand for soybeans will decline as South America hopefully picks up some of that slack and handles some of that Chinese demand post its next crop. And crush demand will grow, if not for beans, then for the oil. Now, globally, 2021 ending stocks are at 91.5 million metric tons. That's up a few hundred thousand tons from last month. And really, the only change was higher carry-in for 21-22 that pushed ending stocks up to a little over 92.5 million tons. Now, worth mentioning, China is expected to import 103 million tons of soybeans, or about 3.785 billion bushels of soybeans in 21-22 as they shift more of their production emphasis towards corn. And hopefully, a lot of that demand will be met by Argentina and Brazil, if they can get a nice recovery in their crops in 21-22. And then lastly, for soybean oil, current marketing year ending stocks reduced minimally by 15 million pounds. That puts us a little over 1.79 billion. There was a 300 million pound increase to food use, and that was offset by a 200 million pound reduction of biofuel demand and 125 million pound reduction to export demand. And because there's a chance that some usage that technically ends up in the biofuel category can show up in the food use category, that may have played a bit of a role there. But the only change to 21-22 was lower stocks due to that aforementioned reduction of carry-in. And as it stands today anyway, ending stocks projected at a little under 1.5 million pounds with a stocks-to-use ratio of 5.5%. Now, globally, ending stocks were increased for both years from the June WASDE. So for 2021, ending stocks now pegged at 4.51 million tons. That's at parity with 2019-20. And for 21-22, ending stocks are projected to fall to 4.15 million tons. Now, that's a subtle increase from last month's report. But as we see, about a 370,000 metric ton decline year over year. And at this point anyway, most major producers are projecting at least some small increases of production for 21-22. But I think the thing to watch is canola production in Canada. Just as Eric mentioned a moment ago, that same dry heat that has been impactful to the upper plains in the U.S. has also been very impactful for the Canadian prairies, where much of the canola seed is grown. And so we'll definitely have to watch to see what the final numbers are for canola production this year. But, you know, potentially with less canola oil production out of that region and some ongoing issues with palm oil production, more so linked to some labor issues as well as some issues with yield, soybean oil demand should not only stay strong, it may increase in future reports. So something to keep an eye on in the coming months.
Great. Thank you, Nicole. All right, let's shift over to sugar. Kevin, the floor is yours.
All right. Well, sugar may not be as eventful as what we saw in some of the grains markets, but USDA did make some changes both in the current crop year as well as, of course, setting some new estimates for the 2022 crops. For this year, as we talked about a little bit on our Friday podcast, the USDA had to reflect all the quota increases. So we had the reassignment of raw sugar TRQ imports of 76,000 tons incorporated this, and the USDA actually increased the TRQ imports 105,000 tons. So they had to dig into a little bit of the projected shortfall as well as incorporating those reassignments. But they kind of offset some of those increases. So instead of seeing a whole 105,000 ton increase, we lost 70,000 tons of other imports, both the other program down 50,000 and other, which would be tier two, 20,000 tons. And on the tier two, there's a big write-up in their write-up section where they talked about how the U.S. Census Bureau had an error and that they were working on fixing it. So we'll try to get more details to figure out exactly what that means. But as a result of that, they're even delayed in issuing two reports this month, the U.S. import report and the SMD report. So we're lacking a little bit of clarity in some of the details on some of this stuff. But bottom line is imports were up 34,000 tons, not drastically given the reassignment. And I think, again, that just goes to show why the trade was so disappointed with the announcement last week and why we are seeing the 16 market sitting there at 36.25 on the nearby contract and still over 31 for 2022. On the 2022 crop, we got kind of our first official look here at what the USDA thinks of the beet and cane crops, and they're not thinking a whole lot, Mike.
Okay.
They were a little pessimistic here. Beet crop, they came in at 5.033 million short tons raw value. That was 192,000 tons below the placeholder that they used based on trend line. So certainly disappointing. And I think, you know, that largely reflects what we're seeing as Eric and Nicole both talked about, the dryness in the upper Midwest. Well, the Red River Valley has certainly been hit pretty hard. And from south to north, south doesn't look so bad, you know, from what we're hearing. But when you get up further north, you know, we're hearing possibility where yields could be as much as 10% below the 5-year average. So just going to have to see how it plays out. The weather has improved a little bit there. I still think these numbers, you know, might be a little bit pessimistic. You know, you might see this number closer to 5.125 million tons with the improved weather. But, you know, obviously we've got several months to go. We're just, you know, a little over 60 days into the crop cycle, particularly in the Red River Valley. So on cane, they're also fairly pessimistic there. In Florida, they came in at 2.015 million tons below their last month's estimate at 2.1, so down 85,000 tons. And Louisiana, they lowered 25,000 tons. Again, nothing significant on that, but you know, we're losing another 110,000 tons on production, so we're down over 300,000 tons overall. And that's down, you know, 275,000 tons or thereabouts versus last year. So certainly pessimistic. On import side, of course, July being the first month where they bring us back to a 13.5% stocks to use ratio, they ratchet up and gave everything under the Mexico category, 484,000 tons. Bring us to a nice and neat 13.5% stocks to use. And, you know, it looks like it's all good on paper, but still a long way to go on figuring out these numbers. On imports, they don't have all the quotas in place yet. Those usually come out sometime around first week or so of August, in which case then you'll see Mexico's final number come back down. But anyway, we're off and running, and we'll have to see how things shake out here over the final 60, 90 days of crop maturity.
Should be interesting. Excellent. Well, we're going to wrap this one up. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Nicole. Thank you, Kevin, for your great recap. Remember, you can go on our IQ platform, and you can access all this information and more. We have monthlies. When the WASDE comes out, we put some information out right away and some intelligence. So if you're not a subscriber, please reach out to us. We'll put you on a trial. If you are a subscriber, go ahead and log in. There's all kinds of cool stuff out there. So as I always like to say, live with an attitude of gratitude. Enjoy every minute, moment with your friends and family, and live with kindness. Kindness. Until next time, take care, everybody.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favell's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favell.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.